not the most beautiful weather out tonight, but it's great to have everybody. So we're going to focus tonight on preparing for Chanukah, which is beginning tomorrow night, Habolina Latova. And I want to share one basic idea that hopefully we could take with us as we think about Chanukah and we observe Chanukah in our lives in different ways.
I won't be scared.
Everybody has a spot? Okay, good. So if you were to take a survey and ask people what is the most challenging holiday for them to celebrate, so what do you think would be the top billed holiday as most challenging?
Pesach
would probably be the most difficult. For some people, Shalach Manos freaks them out.
Yom Kippur
is not easy. Rosh Hashanah, a lot of people getting anxious. So I have to tell you that for me, I might say that Chanukah might be the most difficult holiday to celebrate. And I'll tell you why I think that is for me, and maybe other people, this will resonate with them also. For me, you know what the challenge of Chanukah is? That I have my regular day, and I come running in the door, and everything is normal. You know, everything at home is normal, everything at work and the kollel is normal, and then, you know, at night, life is pretty much normal. You know, you light the candles, it's great. Hopefully everybody sings for a few minutes if they can, like, stay in one place for one second. It's nice, you take pictures, maybe a few seconds of videos, you light your candles, and then that's it. Then oftentimes you don't even have dinner in the same place where your candles are lit. If the dinner is in one part of the house and dinner is in a different part of the house. So some years, the struggle for Chanukah, for me, is to actually pay attention that it's happening. Because, you know, then the lights go out and you went out to Marv or whatever, and it's just, you moved on. Like, it was nice for 5 minutes, but then it's over. At least for Pesach, we might be cooking and cleaning for a few months, but you get to live a little bit in Pesach. You know, you have a full Seder where, even if you're only observing one Seder, you spend a few hours and you're immersed in the experience of Pesach. On Sukkot, you may work like a dog to get there, whether it's cooking or building a sukkah or decorating your sukkah. But at the end of the day, hopefully, for the first night of Sukkot, you don't have a cell phone on. So you're just celebrating Sukkot. That's it. And for Purim, even though some people go to work, I think today it's much less common, Sigizund, than when I was growing up. It's much less common for people to go to work today. And Purim is a big deal. Everybody gets into it. So I'm thinking to myself, you know, how do we understand and add some meaning and some value to Chanukah when it's so rushed? Because on the one hand, you say to yourself, I have 8 days, it's great. On the other hand, it goes by like nothing. Even Friday, you know, Erev Shabbos Chanukah, that's one of the most high-stress times. It is. You would think it's like beautiful, it's awesome, you have Chanukah licht and Shabbos licht, everybody's going to be all, you know, amazing. And it's usually the exact opposite, right? It's usually like a total crisis. When I'm going to daven mincha, I missed the early mincha, so now I have like, I'm half shaven, I'm jumping out of the shower, the Chanukah licht I got to get to because, you know, it's like a total disaster, Erev Shabbos Chanukah. So finally, Friday night of Shabbos Chanukah, you can breathe a little bit, but it's not necessarily just Chanukah specific. So how do we deal with that? And maybe, I wonder if there's actually something to that, not just in a descriptive way, but maybe there's something prescriptive about it. Maybe there's something that we can learn and experience to understand why it's supposed to be like that. And that's not just an accident of history that we never accepted upon ourselves. These are Yomim Tovim, right? The Gemara describes that we accepted, the Gemara in Shabbos says that we accepted them as days of Halal and Hodah, but not as days of Yom Tov. They're not restricted against Malacha. So that's the first thing that I want to put out there, and that is the challenge of Chanukah being the middle of everyday, ordinary life. You know, it's compounded by the fact that it's really dark outside really early, so already you're not in such a best mood when you get in the car, and it's like, it feels like 10 o'clock at night now, and it's only like 5:30. The second is the Gemara tells us in Shabbos, in the second parak, when it introduces to us the experience and the whole background of the holiday of Chanukah. So it says, "My Chanukah, Detana Rabbanan." What is the story of Chanukah? So it tells us that, you know, there was this long-standing battle between the Seleucid Greeks and the Jews who were living in Eretz Yisrael. So you're talking around the year 171, 167, 161, over a period of several years, where there was this ongoing struggle between the Jews and the Seleucid Greeks, and then internally between the Hellenized Jews, the Misyavnim, and the traditional Jews. And we all know that the Greeks, they descended upon the Beis HaMikdash, and they were metame, they ritually defiled all of the vessels in the Beis HaMikdash, and specifically the Gemara describes how they were metame, timu kol hashmanim shebeheichal, they defiled all of the oil that was in the Beis HaMikdash, in the sanctuary. And when the Beis Chashmonai, when the Hasmonean dynasty, this group of Kohanim, they banded together and they reclaimed the temple, when they reconquered the Beis HaMikdash, they found one Pach Shemen Shemunach B'chosam Shal Kohen Gadol, that it had the seal of the Kohen Gadol. And we, the Rishonim, discussed the fact that it was probably buried somewhere, which has halachic significance. They probably searched, they found it buried in the ground, nobody had touched it, there wasn't any Tumas Heset, that nobody had moved it, and they didn't open it, so it was sealed, so you can be assured that it's 100% Tahar. And they lit the menorah for one day, and it lasted for seven miraculous days, and we all know that story. But the problem is that we all know that story. So we take it for granted, that's the story, that's what it is. But did we ever ask ourselves why it is that that was the story? Why didn't the Greeks just destroy the Beis HaMikdash like everybody else? If Antiochus was so anti-religious and so anti-Jewish and so intent on breaking the Jewish people, so why didn't he just destroy the Beis HaMikdash? It seems a little bit short-sighted that you're going to leave the Beis HaMikdash standing and just... We're going to figure out, I'm not sure who taught them, they must have had some very educated informers, how to be metame all the various elements of the Beis HaMikdash. But if I was Antiochus and I wanted to quash a rebellion, I would have told the folks out there, I would have told the goons, just take it to the ground. Right?
He probably wanted to preserve the aesthetic veneer.
So that's an interesting question. Maybe he wanted to preserve the aesthetic veneer. So the question is, at that time, how did the Beis HaMikdash look? It happens to be that it wasn't for a couple decades later that the Beis HaMikdash got a facelift, because it was kind of fallen into disrepair, you could say. The truth is that the Jewish community at that time was, you know, was kind of like in this limbo situation. And then, unfortunately, it only got worse with the infighting in the two different families. So I don't know, interesting question, historically, in what condition the Beis HaMikdash was when they found it. You know, what we talk about today, if you have the privilege, the gift to go to Yerushalayim Har HaKodesh today, you see a Har HaBayis that's much bigger than it was in the time of the Chanukah miracle, because the expansion didn't take place until Herod, which is, you know, a couple hundred years later. So I don't know if he wanted to keep it for aesthetic purposes. And maybe he did. But the question is then, if he wanted to keep it for aesthetic purposes, is that an accident of history? Or is there an element of hashkacha that the Gemara tells us you should know that Timu Kol HaShemanim Shebeheichel, that's something that expresses something deeper about the nature of the miracle, that was destined to be like this, and the miracle was destined to be in that way. Yeah, what were we going to say?
When Alexander was conquering most of the known world, mm-hmm. was it his method to destroy or to co-opt for the Greeks?
Right, so that, it sounds like that was not the case. It was to co-opt it, but you're talking about Alexander of Macedon lives in around the year 330 before the Common Era. Here, you're talking much later, after the death of Alexander, who died at a very young age, the Greek Empire was broken into several components. So they were much weaker, but also you have this current ruler, Antiochus. He is of a different ilk than the prior people. He wasn't the first Greek ruler. He wasn't the first Antiochus. But the previous Antiochus, they got along, you know, whatever it was. The Jewish people had their thing, and these guys had their thing, and it wasn't there wasn't so much tension, but his anti-religious persecution was what sparked the Maccabees' rebellion. So I asked myself, if it was so anti-religious, so why didn't he just destroy the Beis HaMikdash? There must be something. It's not an accident of history. There must be something there. A further element, which is a separate question, but I guess it kind of relates to this. The Gemara tells us in Maseches Avodah Zarah that, you know, they had a lot of offices in the Beis HaMikdash. We don't like to think of it like that, but they did. They had offices and they had storage rooms because it was a big facility, Ke'ilu. It was the Ribono Shel Olam's house, so in every house you have a garage and you have, you know, closets. So the Gemara describes that there was one office, there was one particular lishka that housed stones. So why did it house stones? Because when the Greeks came and defiled the Beis HaMikdash, part of the effect was that they violated the Mizbeach. And you know that the Mizbeach was made out of stone. It was a stone altar. It was put together by stones, and then it was plastered with white plaster on the outside. So if you looked at it, it looked white and clean, and they had to clean it regularly. But beneath that plaster were just gigantic stones. Imagine like the stones of the Kotel that comprised, because they couldn't be hewn with metal. So the Gemara says that these were stones that were unusable anymore because the Mizbeach had to be rebuilt, had to be reconstituted. So they took all the old stones and they put them in an office somewhere. They didn't want to discard them because these were the stones of the Mizbeach, but they couldn't use them anymore because they had to rebuild the Mizbeach from scratch. And the Gemara has an interesting debate. Excuse me, the Rishonim there have in Avodah Zarah have an interesting debate as to whose presence actually defiled the Mizbeach. Was it the non-Jewish presence that defiled it, or was it the Jewish presence, the Misyavna, the Jewish people internally that caused it to be defiled? But either way, irrespective of that machlokas, the Mizbeach was out of service and they put away the stones. So here too, I wonder to myself, is this interesting that if you had to choose what you were going to commemorate, what aspect, what piece of furniture in the Beis HaMikdash you were going to commemorate with a rededication, which would you have chosen? Because we have a similar description in another Gemara that talks about how when the Chashmonaim came, not only did they not have oil, of course they didn't have a menorah. So they had to manufacture, the Gemara says that they took metal poles. We don't realize this, but they took metal poles and they made a makeshift menorah. There's a Gemara has a discussion. Was it just metal poles or did they also have wood? Chipum, you know, this is a question of what exactly it looked like. Some argue that these metal poles were actually military spears, and there's obviously great symbolism in that. That they took the spears with which they were able to conquer the Greeks and they made it into menorah. So here you have a Mizbeach that's put out of service and they took away the stones, they put them in the office. And you have a menorah that was put out of service also because it was Tameh, and they had to make this makeshift menorah. So I don't know. It's hard to argue that the Mizbeach, in a certain sense, is really the heart of the Beis HaMikdash. The question, when you look in the Chumash, of Va'asu l'Mikdash v'shachat b'sochem, why build a Beis HaMikdash? Why build a Mishkan in the first place? So there's discussion among the Rishonim what the core rationale is. But some Rishonim say, you know why you need a Beis HaMikdash in the first place? Because you need a place to be makriv korbanos. You have to have a place to offer korbanos, to offer sacrifices. So it's interesting. And again, we take it for granted, but I think it's worth examining it again. We take for granted, of course, they made a holiday out of the miracle of oil. But why was there a miracle of oil? Why wasn't there a miracle having to do with the Mizbeach? In the end, the Mizbeach is kind of a footnote. You know, some people say, why is it called Chanukah? Chanukah fei, because they rested. Or no, because it was Chanukah Sabayis. It was the rededication of the Beis HaMikdash. So great, if this is Chanukah Sabayis, you say Mizmor Shir Chanukah Sabayis. Some people have that minig tomorrow night after they light candles. They say Mizmor Shir Chanukah Sabayis. If it's really the Chanukah Sabayis, so it wouldn't have been, I would have thought, if I was the Ribono Shel Olam, so I would have said, let's do a miracle for the Mizbeach. That's the core of the whole Beis HaMikdash. So that's a further issue. So we have trying to figure out how to deal with Hanukkah in the middle of regular life. We try to figure out why it was that they were metame the Shemanim and they didn't destroy the Beis HaMikdash. What's the significance of that? Why it is that we celebrate the nace of the menorah and the light of the menorah and not the Mizbeach? And one other observation, which is interesting, is that when you look in the Sefer HaMakabim or other non-rabbinic sources, you don't find any reference to the miracle of the Pach HaShemen. I don't know if there's an earlier source than the Gemara in the second parak of Shabbos that we mentioned earlier. Is there any earlier source or reference to the story of the miracle of the oil? So some might argue, and there are probably some scholars you could find who argue this, although I didn't look today, or this week, or recently. But there are those who argue that, you know, the Nes Pach HaShemen, it's a nice legend. It's a legend that the rabbis made up, and the truth is that many cultures, just open Reader's Digest, they tell you that all the cultures have, even cultures in antiquity, have festivals of light at this time of year, because this is when it gets really dark outside. So the rabbis were looking for some way to commemorate this, you know, this victory in some fashion. So they came up with this nice, you know, fairy tale that they told the kids, and everybody started to believe it. But it doesn't appear in any earlier sources. So I wonder why it is that this nes does not appear in any of what we call the Svarim Hachitzonim. And perhaps to think about all these things, we could think about one aspect of our lives, of our connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, of what we're ultimately about, that illuminates what we do every day and can cast a new light onto how we observe Chanukah. We are familiar with the Pasuk in Tehillim, Ashrei Ha'am Yodei Serua, which we say on Rosh Hashanah before Tekiyos, Hashem Be'or Panecha Yehaleichun. The face of the Ribbono Shel Olam, whatever that means, the countenance of the Ribbono Shel Olam, that is referred to as Or Panim. The Ribbono Shel Olam himself, Kivyachol, whatever this means, is referred to in the tradition of the mystics as Or Ein Sof, as endless light. That's what the Ribbono Shel Olam is. He's the source of Or. It's an intangible quality that, it is an intangible substance that has certain qualities that you can kind of relate to, but obviously you can't grasp it. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the or panim of our life. And what is that or? That or is something, just like natural light, it's something that illuminates, it's something that makes you feel warm. You can sense it even though you can't grasp it with your fingers, right? If you stand close to a warm incandescent light bulb, you can't grasp the light waves that are coming off of it, but you feel the warmth. If you stand next to a fireplace in the wintertime, you feel the warmth. You have it in your life, but you don't touch it. HaKadosh Baruch Hu in our lives is or. It would be interesting, you can ask a child in the JCC to draw a picture of the Ribbono Shel Olam, and they'll draw lots of different things, right? I suspect. But that's a child's perspective, and it would be very interesting to think how our children think about the Ribbono Shel Olam and what the Ribbono Shel Olam looks like. But ultimately, if you were to draw in a certain sense a picture of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it would be a picture of endless light. It would be the Or Ein Sof. If this is it, then we can understand why Ner Hashem Nishmas Adam. The light is the soul. That's the Or, and that's why the Jewish people and the Ribbono Shel Olam and the Torah is all one. That's why I refer to it as Or of Torah, Ki Ner Mitzvah of the Torah Or. It's the same. It's the same idea, just in a lot of different new titles. It's the same concept, just in different shapes and sizes. The Torah is light. It's the light of the Ribbono Shel Olam that He gave to us as a gift. The Ribbono Shel Olam gave us a neshama, which is our light, the Ner Hashem Nishmas Adam, and this light is spiritual in nature. That's why when the Gemara describes the menorah in the Beis HaMikdash, it says, wait a second, v'chi la'ora hu tzarech? When we light the menorah in the Beis HaMikdash, we're not lighting it so that the Ribbono Shel Olam can read. You know, if he needed to read, he would have his Kindle that was lit up. You know, he doesn't need v'chi la'ora hu tzarech, he doesn't need light. So what does the Gemara say? No. You know why you have the or the light of the menorah. It's a simen shaKadosh Baruch Hu mashre shchinaso biYisrael. That's the indication that the Ribbono Shel Olam rests his presence in our midst, in the Jewish people. Because it's or. Wherever you find or, that's where you find the Ribbono Shel Olam. And the person who feels that or, when we feel that or, we're feeling that connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. In the midst of very, very grave darkness, the holy Piasetzner of Klonimus Kalman Shapira Hashem Yikom Domus Chus Yagin Aleinu, he writes in one of his drushas, he writes about Emunah. And in this drasha, when you write about Emunah, in Chanukah, in Tav Shin Beis, things are very, very bad. Very bad. December 1942 in the Warsaw Ghetto. So he writes about Emunah. Emunah is not something that you think in your mind, that you have to take a leap of faith, that my cognition goes this far, and then I'm going to take a leap of faith. He says, Emunah is not that. Emunah is feeling the or of Hashem within yourself. Feeling the connection to the or of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Or is that connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? And the Rebbe there is talking, he's talking probably to himself, and he's talking to all the people, the Nevach, the few broken souls who are left with him at this time. That is the or. The or is our connection, the expression of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in our world. Right? If you had to sum it up one way, how would you capture God in this world in one way? It would be or. It would be light. So what do we learn? We learn that the or is the Ribbono Shel Olam. And if that's the case, everything makes sense. Because what gives us the sustenance to go on through life, ultimately it is our connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's what carries us from one day to the next. That's what the Rebbe was talking about to the poor, broken Jews who were with him in the ghetto, that we need to dig down so deep as we can possibly go to connect to that or, and that's what's going to get us till tomorrow. That or, says the Nesivah Shalom, when we say Yehi Or, you know, the Medrash says in the beginning of Bereshis that the first pasuk represents four different exiles. The Nesivah Shalom says the answer to the four exiles is two words, it's one concept. It's Yehi Or. If we hold on to the Or of the Or Ein Sof of the Ribbono Shel Olam from the beginning, so then that will last us through all the four exiles. Because ultimately it's the Or in our lives, that is the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's that warmth and that illumination that's going to carry us through. It's like we say in Rosh Hashanah time, Hashem, Ori V'Yishi. The Ribbono Shel Olam is our Or. So now we can understand why when it's outside, so dark, that's the time when we need to reflect on the fact that we have Or in our lives. And the darkness is not just because Shkia here in Chicago is like, I don't know, 4:15 or something. You know, lich benching is sometimes before 4 o'clock. It's because during different times in our lives, we go through difficult periods. And so when we're going through a difficult period, choshech ze yavan, as the Medrash says on that first pasuk in Bereshis, what we're going to tap into, in a certain sense, it's not going to be the avoda and the Beis HaMikdash. It's not going to be the karbonos. Karbonos are gevaldik. They're very important. But when you got to dig down deep, we got to touch the or that's within each one of us. And it's interesting that the Bais Chadash, in his commentary on the Tur, he quotes a medrash, very interesting medrash, that somebody told Antiochus, they told him, you know, you need to, if you want to subdue the Jews, you need to get rid of the avod, you need to be mevatel, the tamid. And then he said to them, V'od amar lahem mitzvah achas yesh biyadam, im atem mevatlem osam biyadam, kvar him avudim. There's one mitzvah that if you can get rid of that, if you can wrest that from the Jewish people, they will be totally lost. And what is that? What is that? V'ezezeh hadlokas menorah. The lighting of the menorah. Why? Because the pasuk says, "Lahalos ner tamid, kol zman shemadlikin oso." All the time that you light the menorah, so tamid heim omdin. It's dafka the menorah that has to be tamid, because that light, that aura of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is what we need at all times. And maybe in light of this, we can understand where everything is. we can have a Beis HaMikdash, and we can go through religious lives, but if we don't have the or, a real relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so then it's just going through the motions. Right? We could do a lot of things, but if we aren't, if we're not being, we're just doing, then it's not really Avodas Hashem. In a certain sense, it's not coincidental that the expression of or fits with the idea that the Greeks didn't destroy the Beis HaMikdash. Because then you could say, oh look, the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed, so now we have nothing. You know what the bigger challenge is? What the Greeks said to us is, you can have a Beis HaMikdash, you can lead whatever religious lives you want. But the challenge that we had to face, and that we face on an ongoing basis, is, well, where is God in our religious lives? Where is the aura of HaKadosh Baruch Hu? You know, are we just going through the motions? So the Hellenists said, no problem, you guys want to keep the Beis HaMikdash, gesinta hate. But it's the idea that there is an or, there's something that is imperceptible that you can't feel, right? It's that or, you can't touch it. It fits very well with the concept of Tumah and Tahara. Go explain to somebody, you know, the laws of ritual purity and ritual impurity. You know, it doesn't really add up. You know, if somebody were to see me when I would go, if I'm going some point to dunk in the mikveh, and then I come out, they see me 20 minutes later, they wouldn't see anything different. They wouldn't notice anything different. But according to the halacha, I'm in a different place. My connection with HaKadosh Baruch Hu is different. The or in my life is different. So I wonder if it was bedavka that the Ribbono Shel Olam wanted the Beis HaMikdash to still be there to show us that it's not so much, obviously we need the Beis HaMikdash, but it's not so much about having a Beis HaMikdash. It's whether you have the or in the Beis HaMikdash. And maybe that's why the Nes is dafka in the or and the menorah and not in the Mizbeach. And maybe that's why it doesn't appear in the Svarim HaChitzonim. Because this idea of or, of a spiritual light which is on the inside, which is intangible, is something that's very difficult to explain to somebody else. It's very difficult to capture that in words. It's like the Rebbe said in the ghetto, he said, it's like a feeling that you have, and you can't really convey that to somebody else because it's on the inside. You know, you're not surprised then that the Nes was not in the menorah itself. The menorah, like we said before, was a makeshift Lego menorah. The Nes was on the inside, on the intangible. It was on the light that it continued to burn. The Nes was in an intangible. It was in the or, not in the menorah itself, because it's what's inside that matters. And what's inside, that feeling of or, the neshama, the ner Hashem nishmas Adam, it's difficult to communicate that. And sometimes when you try to communicate that, it actually looks foreign. It's almost like you totally don't get it. Someone suggested to us, and Nechama and I watched recently, a film, a very interesting film, that's about a couple of people who left the Hasidic community. It's a very interesting movie. We also watched a different movie, of not the same but similar ilk, called Menashe, which is it's a Yiddish movie, also very interesting, very thoughtful. You know, if you're looking for a few minutes of Bittul Torah when you need to recharge, if you're looking for a Yiddish movie, Menashe was very interesting. And this other one on Netflix, I forget the name of it.
One of us.
So one of the things that that you see, and I don't remember which movie it was on, these are good opportunities to reflect, however you view different communities. Everyone needs to reflect. So one of the things that I thought was interesting, because I don't even remember which film it was in, because they kind of meld together in my mind, was there was a depiction of a Madura. I assume it was Lag BaOmer. And you see people dancing around a Madura. I think it was Lag BaOmer. It must have been Lag BaOmer. It didn't say. And as someone who has felt the warmth and the light of the Ribbono Shel Olam, I was trying to picture myself as if I was there, and then I'm sitting here watching it and feeling like, wow, that looks really bizarre. It looks really bizarre from the outside. Or when you see a scene of a group of men sitting at a tish. So this Friday night, we had a beautiful Oneg Shabbos, we had a tish. You had a group of men sitting around a table going like this, nodding, shaking, and singing. So when you put that on a screen, it looks very odd. It just looks weird. You see grown men standing, you know, locking arms in long coats, kicking around in a circle. It's like, it looks strange. But the answer is because if you look at only the chitzonius, itaka is odd. Right? If you look at a makeshift menorah that's made out of poles, it doesn't look like it makes a lot of sense. But if it's not about what it looks like on the outside, but what is inside, and this inside is not some kind of like phantasmagoric, you know, irrational idea. It's a real feeling that's rooted in a person's, the depth of their soul, of their personality, of who we are at our core. That's real. That's not imaginary. That's not illusory. And that doesn't translate very well on a screen, and it doesn't translate well in a book. And maybe that's why it never translated. This whole story with the menorah never translated in the Svar Machitzonim. Because the Svar Machitzonim, they'll give you the outside stats. They'll tell you how many Greeks there were, and how many Jews there were, and how many elephants there were, and how many days they fought. Because that's all Dvarim that are things that are on the outside that you can measure. You can count that. But you can't really measure ore. And maybe, based on all of this, now I can appreciate the challenge of Hanukkah, but understand why the Hanukkah story is so significant in the way that it is. Because if the idea of ore is tapping into that intangible connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu within, in every circumstance, that always has to be there. So then to say, you know, we're going to take a day off of real life, and then we're going to focus on HaKadosh Baruch Hu, well, that's kind of not the point. The point is to have Choshech, and within the Choshech to have Or. The point is, you're right, on Pesach, you need to stop everything. You need to, you know, blowtorch your house, turn your life upside down, and make everyone nuts to just sit at the table for 5 minutes and tell everybody, Chevra, stop! There is a Ribono Shel Olam. And let's eat. And then let's eat some more. You know, that's what we got to do sometimes. You have to stop everything. But sometimes the avoda perhaps is exactly the opposite. It's to say, and it's hard, but maybe that's why it's there, is to say we're going to take an average, ordinary day. What day is tomorrow? Tuesday. We're going to take a Tuesday. I'm going to walk in the door like every other Tuesday, and everything is going to be going exactly like every other Tuesday. And within that Tuesday, we're going to take a few minutes, and we're going to all just recognize that there is or in our lives. There's Choshech outside, there's snow on the ground, different periods of our life has Choshech, and we're going to bring out the or, and then we're going to go right back to our regular life. We're going to have dinner at the dinner table, we're going to get together with, like, you know, our cousins who we can't stand, or we can't stand, whatever it is, like, you know, whatever we're doing. But the point is that the or is besocha choshech. The or is not saying we're going to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. The Beis HaMikdash is there. The question is, do we have the or? And maybe that's one perspective on Hanukkah, that it's a big challenge. There's no doubt about that. I know that it's a challenge for me. You know, how do you make that or last for more than just those few minutes? It's almost like we wish we didn't have to leave the Hanukkah candles, because it's so nice right now when we're all just standing there and there's ore and it's shining. But unfortunately in life, that's not how it works. Sometimes we got to walk away from the candles and we go out and it's dark and it's cold and it's not so pleasant. So what do? We take the image of the lights and we take it with us, because it's the ore. And that's why even the times of the Gemara, this was more common, but today, thank God, it's not so common. But you know that there's something called a Birchas Haroeh. In the times of the Gemara, if a person, God forbid, didn't have a Chanukah menorah, and sometimes it comes up halacha lemaisa, if somebody's traveling and no one's going to light for them, exactly, whatever the circumstance, not so nogea. But you can make a bracha on seeing somebody else's lights. Haroeh ner Chanukah mevarech, the Gemara has an opinion. So be shown a debate. When can you make a bracha haroeh? It's very uncommon, hopefully. It's mostly common that people, either you're late later when you get home, or somebody else is lighting for you, or whatever it is. But in theory, you can make a bracha haroeh. How? Where else do you find you can make a bracha haroeh? You can make a bracha haroeh on seeing somebody's matzah? On seeing somebody's sukkah? No. But if the idea is, you wish, sorry. Sorry. No birchas haroah. But if the idea is saying, this light reminds me that there is an or ein sof in my life, even the birchas haroah will help. Even seeing the light in somebody else's window might help me. If I can't even see the light in my own life, if I don't have that feeling of the Rabbonu Shalom, it's okay. Because you know what? I can step outside and see somebody else who has it, and that'll have an impact on me. So hopefully this year, we can look at those lights and we can say, you know what? It really doesn't matter what's going on the outside. Whether the menorah looks perfect or it doesn't look perfect. But each one of us has that Ner Hashem Nishmas Adam. Has that or Ein Sof that is within us. That's the spark, the Chelek Elokami Mal. That is the or. And that or, it burns ever present, even in the darkest nights of the winter. Of course, it burns during the summer when things are, when brighter in the springtime. Of course, the or is there. The chiddush is not so much to see the or when it's light outside. The chiddush is to see the or when it's dark. It's not always so easy, but hopefully, if we can tap into it, even when things may not feel kulo ruchani, but we can tap into that spark of ruchnius, that or ein sof that we have within each one of us. And I wish everybody a wonderful Chanukah. Thank you.
Thank you.